You know, this this gravy wave thing has got me a little flummoxed and perplexed. I don't know about you, because I don't quite get it. I'm no Einstein. I admit it. Yeah. I'm the first to admit it. What, you are?
You are a brainiac, though. You are a brainiac.
I know a lot of useless knowledge. But, you know, adds up to a well-rounded individual. So I thought, we need to call the UW, astrophysics. You know, I think we have a big department here. They're very instrumental in a lot of these things, actually, because they make instruments. And we have Sebastian Hines, professor of astrophysics, to explain what is going on with the gravy wave from space right now. And I believe he's here, I'm hoping. Professor Sebastian. Oh, there you are. Okay, I didn't even know we had a backstage. All right. Nice to see you.
It's good to be here.
Sebastian, and I got your curriculum vitae.
Oh, fantastic.
But it's like 14 pages long, and I only ran off the first two.
That's okay.
Suffice it, I just got up to black hole scatology.
Yeah, that's it. That's my one specialty. The other is a gravy dynamicist. So.
Yeah, it's black hole scatology. You get good titles for
it. I do.
Was this a talk or was that? Yeah, it was an invited talk.
This is the black hole exhaust. You know what they get rid of once they swallow something.
Okay, and it's a good title that draws people who are not necessarily interested in the topic.
Yeah. You always want to interest people who are otherwise not interested in black holes, of course.
Is black holes pretty much your thing, right?
That's pretty much my thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And UW has got a lot of. Does it have a foot into this whole thing?
We have several feet in black holes. Yes,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. And the gravity wave thing. Were you
the
on
gravity
top of
wave?
That?
So the gravity wave is something that's nationwide, but especially the UW in Milwaukee has a big foot in the gravity waves too. So.
Did they get ahead of you on that? On this, was there a race to the gravity waves?
They got hit first. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Do you feel a little bad now that you're wasting your time on scatology?
I should have been doing gravy, so that's for sure.
And I guess there's some place in Minnesota. Where are these telescopes that found this?
So there's one in Washington.
In Washington.
And then there's one in Louisiana.
Okay, thank God it's not in Minnesota.
Yes.
And what did they find, and what is it? Tell us about this.
So, you know, Einstein predicted this 100 years ago, and so it's based on his idea that space and time are woven together into this fabric, and that fabric turns out to be stretchy. So stretchy fabric can wiggle, and that was the prediction that he made. It's really tiny wiggles by the time they get to us, so tiny that he couldn't have possibly thought of actually measuring them. So, I mean, I'm sure he thought about it, but it would have been impossible. But now it's possible, and... we find that the predictions are exactly right. So this is exactly what you want to do as a scientist. You want to make a prediction, you want to see it come true, and then you celebrate. And I haven't really seen ever that many physicists so giddy as when they announced that discovery.
Yeah, so. I know. It's been everywhere. And I don't know what they're giddy about. So that's why we asked you to come in here. Thank you for doing it.
So I brought you a little...
is this space-time
fabric?
A little
bit of fabric space-time, that's right. So we can play merging black holes, which is what was seen. So the way this works, and you can play along, ladies and gentlemen at home, you just bring out a bathing suit and you stick your finger into the top and bend it all the way down. Uh-huh. And I'm going to come from the bottom, and then we're going to spin it.
I've never had this experience before with another person.
Right, you're warping, you know, our space-time here. So we're going to spin it counterclockwise. Uh-huh. We're going to go around each other. You have to spin two.
Which way do I go?
There you go, like that.
That's okay.
So now we're going to spin faster and faster and get closer and closer, and then we merge.
Oh, wow, that was weird.
And the ripples that go around here, that's what we see in those gravity waves.
I feel like I want to see you again.
All right. Yeah, that was a different experience, for sure.
Are you with someone?
Now, the difference is you have to do this at half the speed of light, right? So.
Okay. That was very fascinating and pretty rewarding, actually, but I still don't totally get it. I understand. What was Einstein's equation for all this?
So the field equations are equations that tell you how space and time is warped if you have mass sitting in space, and how mass bends and stretches fabric, the fabric of space-time. And then
the mass is actually bending the gravity.
The mass of the two black holes is making the waves.
Making the waves.
And as they go
around,
they're
colliding.
Yeah. So you have two 30 solar mass black holes. You take 30 suns and you squish them to the size of Los Angeles, basically. Mm-hmm. And two of them going around each other. Mm-hmm. And they get closer and closer. They get closer and closer because they emit these gravity waves. right? So that actually makes them collide, the formation of these waves. And then they get so close that they merge and make one bigger black hole that's almost twice as massive and twice as big, but it's not quite twice as massive. And the rest of that mass, about three times the mass of the sun, that's the energy that went into the gravity waves. So you take three suns, you annihilate them, and then make waves in the fabric of space-time.
There's like three. No. There are two holes.
Two black holes.
But you say the mass of three.
And the mass of three suns is disappearing, going into the gravity waves, wiggling space-time.
And why did we just... Shouldn't this be happening all the time?
It's happening all the time. And the surprising thing is that it's happening more often maybe than we thought, sort of naively. It's definitely at the upper end of the predicted range. So this seems to be a quite common thing, and it's surprising, maybe, that nature is so good at making these big black holes and then merging them, smushing them together.
And yet all this power over all this space and all this time, and it just makes a little chirp.
It's a little chirp. So that's the signal that was detected. It's you hear the black holes going around each other. You can actually translate that to sound, and you can see them going around, making gravity waves, getting closer and closer. The waves get higher and higher. The amplitude goes up, and the frequency goes up because they get closer and closer. And the closer they get, the faster they spin.
Yeah.
And then when they merge, the whole thing goes away because now there's no more two black holes.
We have the chirp here.
Excellent.
The sound of two black holes colliding and merging. Where did this sound come from? A long time ago in the distant reaches...
No, we don't want NPR on this. We want
the chirp.
The actual chirp.
Well, we can
it was like morning edition.
We can whistle a chirp, right? That kind of thing. So.
Yeah, but it doesn't sound like that.
No, but close enough.
Here it is. Here is the actual chirp. No, Tom is waving.
All right.
Okay. We had it, too, but it's amazing. Like a little blip, it sounds
That's
like.
A blip, and by how fast the frequency goes up, how high the pitch gets, you can tell the masses of the black hole and the difference of the masses and their properties. And we can learn a lot of, really fascinating stuff about gravity, about Einstein's predictions. We can test it to a really high degree. It was impossible before. We can measure the properties of the black holes, and how fast do they rotate. And as they rotate, they drag space and time around them with them. Mm. So this is a completely new way of looking at the universe.
Well, that all seems reasonable to me. And Einstein, was there any reason for him to know this?
So he had formulated his theory of gravity the year before he made the prediction.
Yeah.
And he was wondering, how the information of gravity actually flies through the universe, right?
Okay,
if we talk, what is
gravity? Is there a wave? Is there a...
Right. So how does Earth know that the sun is there, and how does the Earth know if the sun moves, and how fast does the information travel? So he made the calculations from his equations that he derived and found that there must be waves. And then about just 100 years ago, he made that prediction. And then in about the same year, Schwarzschild calculated what now is known as the solution for black holes. So both of those things were done in 1916, and 100 years later, we have this fantastic discovery.
Amazing. But once again, why don't we have heard these chirps? It should be like chirping like crickets, shouldn't it? With all the black holes that are colliding.
So black holes like this don't collide every second, but they collide, it seems to
be
often enough that we can find it within a week or a few weeks of turning on the instrument. The thing is, the instrument was made much more sensitive.
Okay.
And so that made it possible to discover black holes of this mass. And so you can look much further back where there are bigger black holes.
We have the chirp.
We have the chirp. Okay, so you can hear the blip at the end. Okay, so that was repeated several times.
Yeah. Why
short.
So small? Shouldn't it be like a massive explosion?
It is. If you're close, then it's a massive explosion. But it's it's.
By the time it gets to us, it's
1.3 billion light years away, and the further away you go, the weaker the blip. Yeah, it's extremely tiny, but.
So now, does this have an effect on what you do now with black holes? Does it change your awareness, or is it altered, or somehow enhance it?
Well, it enhances, of course, the understanding of their properties, right? So the fact that we can measure the spins of these, and then that we know that there are enough 30 solar mass black holes around that you have to be able to make them somehow, right? So the question is, how do you make a 30 solar mass black hole? How do you grow it to that size? You start with a star. It dies by the end of its life. It collapses. The core of the star collapses to make.
That's a black hole.
That's a black hole. If it's a big enough star, but you need a really big star to make a 30 solar mass black hole, right? So, you have to have at least 60 solar masses of star typically to make something like that.
I would think at least.
And that's right.
Yeah.
And most stars are not nearly that big. Most stars are like the sun, so they have 1 times the mass of the sun, not 60.
Yeah.
And so the question is, how many of those massive stars are there, and how easy is it to make a black hole out of them? So this goes a long way to addressing that.
Yeah. And is there a particular aspect of black holes that is your specialty, your forte?
Well, I think we already talked about that, but... Yeah. So I,
we did. I don't remember what it was.
So the scatology aspect. So I study what comes out. All
the scatology.
Yeah. So I study what goes in and what comes back out. So what comes out from near the black hole. Once it's inside, you can't bring it back out. But everything that went inside stays inside. But
what comes out?
What comes out from near the black hole? Yeah. Gravity waves do come out. And then what comes out from stuff that's falling in near the black hole? That's what I study. So stuff slamming into the interstellar gas and basically.
So when do we get our big press here for UW astrophysics?
Well,
have you discovered something that you're on the verge of
announcing? So UW Milwaukee has big press on this, and then we're studying the discoveries of things that happen when you actually see matter falling in. So we see the light that's coming out. We see echoes of the light that came from the black hole. So ripples in light that reach Earth when the light scatters.
Now, if I fall into a black hole, do I stay relatively intact if in a different form?
So that really depends on the size of the black hole.
Yeah.
So if you fall into a black hole that was made from a star that died, you're going to get ripped to shreds before you ever get to the inside of what we call the event horizon. The event horizon is the place where you cannot come back out.
Yeah. Okay.
So once you're inside, you're in. That's it. But for a black hole that was made by a star, you're going to be ripped to shreds. If you fall into a black hole that's...
A really big one.
That's, a 30. Million to a billion times the mass of the sun. 30 is probably not going to do it. But a billion times the mass of the sun in the centers of big galaxies, that you're going to survive that.
I am?
Yes.
In the same form, or in several different dimensions?
If you have a good spacecraft or spacesuit that, allows you to avoid radiation and such. But once you're inside, you're going to get ripped to shreds anyway. And unfortunately, you can't tell anybody about it because nobody will hear it, right? Because you're inside the black hole, your signal will not get out. So it's an unpleasant thing to do. I would not recommend it. And I would also not recommend parking your spacecraft next to two merging black holes because those gravitational waves will also rip you. But the good thing is
there are good news and bad, I guess, on the black hole scene. Professor Sebastian Hines, thank you so much for coming down here.
Pleasure.
Elucidating us on the whole thing we're hearing about these gravity waves. It's black holes. He's taking his cloth and he's going now. Thank you so much. Oh, he's staying. Okay. No, you're welcome.